Random House Audio presents Secret Ingredients, The New Yorker Book of Food and Drink. Edited by David Remnick. Read for you by Mark Bramhall, Mark Deakins, Susan Deniker, Kimberly Farr, Stephen Hoy, Don Leslie, and Arthur Morey. Dining Out.
The finest butter and lots of time. Joseph Wexberg. When I went to France this summer, after an absence of more than a year, I was pleased to find that for the first time since the end of the war, my Parisian friends had stopped griping about the black market and rationing, and were again discussing, passionately and at great length, the heady mysteries of la grande cuisine, which, next to women, has always been their favorite topic of conversation in times of content. Once more, with the air of brokers divulging something hot in the market, they were confiding to each other the addresses of good restaurants. The finest restaurant in France, and perhaps anywhere, it was agreed by my always well-informed friends, is not in Paris. If I wanted to have the Epicurean experience of my life, they assured me, I would have to go to Vienne, a town of 23,000 inhabitants in the department of Isère, 17 miles south of Lyon, at the confluence of the Rhône and Guer rivers. There I would find the Restaurant de la Pyramide and its proprietor, the great, the formidable, the one and only Monsieur Poin. "Ah, Fernand Poin," said one of my French friends with a deep sigh. "The greatest epicures in France and Navarre sing his praises. His gratin décrivit riches perfection. The yearbook of the Club des Cent Clubs awards him the mark of excellent, its highest. I once had a volaille en vessie there that Poin's hors d'oeuvres alone are worth a trip from New York," someone else said. "He calls them hors d'oeuvres, but they are a meal in themselves. And what a meal! There is a pâté. Last year at Poin's, I had the best lunch I've had since Escoffier left the Ritz," a third gourmet friend told me. This friend is a man of 74 years and 320 pounds, and he has spent most of the former in increasing the latter with good food. In short, you must go to Poin's restaurant. I objected mildly that I wasn't much interested in the show places of la grande cuisine. Since the disappearance of the black market, France's restaurants have returned to their pre-war standard, which is, by and large, the best in the world. I could see no reason, I said, for patronizing fancy establishments when there is such an astonishing number of small restaurants all over the country where one can get a delicious omelette, a succulent veal stew, a fine cheese, and a bottle of honest vin du pays for less than 600 francs, or something under $2. "Ah, but Poin's restaurant is not a show place," my old friend said. "It is a temple for gastronomes who know that la grande cuisine must be well orchestrated, that it must be surrounded by careful details ranging from the temperature of the dining room to that of the wines, from the thinness of the pastry shells to that of the glasses, from the color of the fruits to that of..." "All right," I said, "I'll go." "But it's not a question of whether or not you will go," my friend said. "The question is, will Monsieur Poin let you eat in his place? He has thrown out American millionaires and French ex-ministers when he didn't feel like serving them. Only last week, a friend of mine called Monsieur Poin long distance and asked him to reserve a table for the next day. That, of course, was a mistake, because Monsieur Poin usually insists on being notified at least 3 days beforehand. My friend gave his name, a very important name in French politics, I assure you. Ha! Monsieur Poin pretended to be totally unimpressed and kept saying, 'Would you mind repeating the name?' Before long, my friend had lost his celebrated poise and could only mumble that he was being recommended by Monsieur Léon Blum. And what do you think Monsieur Poin said to that? He said, 'And who is Monsieur Blum, if I may ask?'" My friend chuckled. "But I think I can help you out with an introduction. I have a British friend, Monsieur Pipino, who happened to be among the Allied troops that liberated Vienne, and I'll have him give you a letter that will open all doors to you. Any friend of Monsieur Pipino's is treated royally at Point's. But be sure to call Monsieur Point well in advance to reserve your table, and for heaven's sake, don't think of ordering your meal. You don't order at Point's. He tells you what to eat. A few days later, I received a note from my friend enclosing an amiable letter of introduction from a Mr. T.H. Pipino, and decided to put in a person-to-person call to Monsieur Point, without delay, to reserve a table for lunch some day the following week. Finally, after some misunderstandings involving Point's name, my name, and the name of a girl, Denise something, who had a lovely way of yawning and seemed to be the long-distance operator in Vienne, I got a hold of a man with a high, querulous voice who said, yes, he was Point, and there were no tables available for the next week, or the next 2 weeks, for that matter. I quickly said that I was a friend of Mr. Pipino's. Monsieur Point's voice abruptly dropped several notes as he said, oh. Then he precipitately told me that I might come any day I liked. Absolutely, it would be a pleasure. And how about tomorrow? And in whose name should the table be reserved? I began to spell out my name, but Monsieur Point must have got restless because he said not to bother with the name. There would be a table. He hung up forthwith, without a goodbye. My friends in Paris had urged me to prepare myself for my monumental lunch by eating only extremely light food, and very little of it, during the preceding 24 hours, and I was hungry and cross when my overnight train pulled into Vienne early the following morning. A gentle rain was misting down upon the green trees of the town's miniature boulevards and blurring the outlines of the narrow streets bordered by old houses and small, dark shops. I set out for the nearby Grand Hotel du Nord, where, again on the advice of my friends, I had engaged a room. "You'd better plan to spend the night," they had said. "No use trying to rush away. You have to relax after a meal at Point's." There were only a few people on the street, pale, stockingless girls who were carrying small lunch boxes, and shabbily dressed men who looked as though they surely had never lunched or dined at Point's. The Grand Hotel du Nord was, despite its name, an unassuming establishment that did not indulge in such extravagances as elevators, a bathroom on every floor, and warm water after 9 in the morning, but my room was clean and the comforter on my bed was filled with eiderdown. I had a pleasant view of two sides of a square, on one flank the town museum, on the other the Café du Commerce et des Voyageurs and its clients, all of them, I was sure, busy in lively discussions of politics, soccer, and the high cost of living. I washed up, read a newspaper I had bought at the station, politics, soccer, and the high cost of living, and finished my interrupted sleep. When I awoke, it was getting on toward 12 o'clock, and nearly time for me to present myself at the Restaurant de la Pyramide. As I stepped into the street, I was stopped by a young man wearing a raincoat and a beret and carrying a pipe. He smiled at me like a fuller brush man, asked my pardon for his presumption, and informed me that he was Jean Lecoutier, an archaeologist who had been sent to Vienne by the Ministry of National Education to dig up the ruins of the houses, temples, aqueducts, baths, and assorted monuments that the Romans left there 2,000 years ago. "I happened to be visiting my friend, the desk clerk of your hotel, as you came in, and I saw on the registration blotter that you were a writer," Monsieur Lecoutier said. "Right away I told myself that I would make it my business to take you around." I tried to protest, but he said, "Oh, don't worry. No bother at all. My two colleagues will carry on with the work. There are three of us archaeologists here, a very old man, un homme mûr, a mature man, and myself." Monsieur Lecoutier prodded me energetically with the stem of his pipe. "You must realize, monsieur, that Vienne, the old Vienna Allobrogum, was the capital of the Allobroge in the 1st century B.C. Julius Caesar established a colony here. Later, the Romans went up north and founded Lugdunum, which eventually became...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?